Hi, today's May 21st, 2023. This is Mobile View Podcast 460. I almost said 4,000.
You know, there are weeks where it could be 4,000.
460. I'm Todd Agassaward, my good friend, a good Dr. John Westfall. And we're going to start off by catching up on a few recent past topics, especially one where I have to offer a half of a mea culpa, maybe.
Half. So, you know, the Latin mea maxima culpa is mea minima culpa.
Yeah. Mea half a culpa.
Ah, gotcha.
So in podcast 456, I mentioned I bought a very inexpensive wireless lav mic called, I don't know how you pronounce it, it's spelled ABS-GEEGA, so ABS Giga, I guess. And I gave it 3 stars, even though I really didn't like it, because it was cheap. It was under $30. It did what it was supposed to do theoretically, but the audio volume was just so low, I had to crank it up by orders of magnitude to make it listenable. And I have some mini podcast examples so folks can hear that. Although surprisingly, and I guess maybe I know why now. Surprisingly, even when I had to use like logarithmic increases in volume, there was no distortion. It still sounded pretty good, which is why I gave it 3 stars. You know, I mean, I could fix it, sounded okay. I didn't hear a lot of, distortion when I cranked it up, and I left it at that. Okay, so fast forward to last week, I got my Google Pixel 7a phone, upgrading from a 4a, and I said, hey, you know, it's got a USB-C port. Now, why don't I plug in the lav mic's RF transmitter and try it with Android, which I had not done before, even though I had a 4A. I just didn't think about it because I really wanted to use an iPad mini 6 or an iPhone 14 Pro. So I plugged it in and I used Google's built-in Android recorder app. And lo and behold, the volume's fine on an Android phone. And so I think I did the right thing. I went back to Amazon and I edited my review of the device saying, hey, it still doesn't work well with an iOS, iPadOS device, so don't use it with that. But on a Google Pixel 7a Android phone, works as advertised with, you know, adequate volume and all that kind of good stuff. So I am a happier camper. I still would prefer to use my iPhone or my iPad for recording for a bunch of reasons, probably some of which are probably silly, but just a personal preference. But at least I have something to record on now.
Very good. It's weird volume. When it's just a strange thing when it's a little difference like that. Just the device you're connecting up to, you expect hardware to act like hardware no matter what it feeds.
Right. and as I said, I tried in two Apple devices, and also I tried it with two different apps to make sure it wasn't an app issue. I used Apple's built-in voice recorder app, I forget what it's called now, and I also use a third party app that's highly regarded called Just Press Record, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But nope, doesn't work on a iOS type device. So I partially retract my comment earlier criticism. It still doesn't work with iOS, iPadOS, but works fine on Android. And so I called up Paul Lawler yesterday and I asked him if he could meet me at Starbucks and let's do a test semi-outdoors, you know, sit outside of Starbucks, use their Wi-Fi, and we'll buy something, you know. We'll be total freeloaders and test this out. So there we go. Next up, and I kind of want your opinion on this, John, because, you know, I do value your opinion greatly. Just last week, we were talking about the Google Pixel tablet, and I know you're not interested in a Pixel tablet, but I am, you know, for a variety of reasons, one of which is to replace my Lenovo Smart Display, which is going to be out of support since Google decided to pull support for it. Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking about getting the Google Pixel tablet, even though it's more than twice the cost of a smart assistant type device. The current Google, what do they call it? Something Max, Nest Max Pro or something. I think it's like $230. I think I wrote it down. Yeah, it's $230. It's less than half the price of a Google Pixel tablet, which includes a dock. And it's a tablet. So, you know, I could And theoretically, it works with USI 2.0 stylus, so I could use it for my Doodle a Day project. But Android tablets are not good.
Yeah, that is the age-old problem. I have thought a lot about the Google I/O announcements and thought about if I wanted to play around with them, and I just feel like I have not got enough confidence that Android on a tablet would do what I want it to do, which is be functional. So I think I need to see real world reviews, and I think I need to see a sustained development track by Google into the tablet ecosystem for at least a year or so before I will believe that it's back. Now, that is because I have a very low Google ecosystem footprint right now.
Yeah.
Most of my stuff is in iCloud. And so if I were more like you, if I had a split, then I probably would be okay with just seeing good real-world reviews when it came out.
Yes.
Yeah, then I would pull the trigger and go for it. I might even go for it now because of the hub, the difference in price between the Nest Hub Max, and it would seem like a small additional amount just to have the toy to play with them.
Yeah, I hear you. No, and I have a similar feeling.
It is a really hard thing. I just don't trust Google right now to have my back when it comes to Android on a tablet or a flip foldable that goes in the tablet mode. They just have shown time and time again that they're not, on even their own apps, they're not going to make them play nice with folds and flips and larger than a candy bar phone. So, I know. And I would not wait for WWDC because that's one thing you put in our notes.
Yeah.
About waiting for WWDC. Now, I don't think there's going to be anything at WWDC that's going to change your mind one way or another.
Yeah.
Even if Apple comes out with a smart assistant with display, Apple's assistant is not an assistant in the same sense as Google or Amazon. Apple needs to give me a year building up Siri back to something that's on par before I would consider a smart assistant with from Apple.
Siri needs to be as good as it was before Apple bought it. And it was really good before Apple bought it.
Yeah,
it was really pretty handy. And then they, dumbified it or something like that. Oh, and Siri's feelings are hurt on my MacBook. I'm sorry, Siri. Says, I'm not sure I understand. We can discuss this later, Siri. You've got issues. Or I've got issues with you. I am also concerned by the way that Google will drop support for the Nest Hub Max right after I buy it. Because they'll decide everybody should buy the Pixel tablet twice the price.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. Well, there's no special deal, I think, to buy a Pixel tablet now. You don't get a free earbuds or you don't get a, special discount. So there's no rush, from what I can tell, to buy one. So I'm just going to sit and wait, think about it, look at my retiree budget. Is this a hit I can take? Especially since I just paid a pretty hefty veterinary bill for one of my pet rabbits. But at any rate, who is doing well. They did a good job. So I'm still on the fence. I'm still thinking about it. I just my Doodle a Day project is really my problem, right? It's been a nightmare. It's like, oh, I really should try this, and I'll go, buy something just to try it.
That makes me feel better about not getting into it like you. I've talked many times about starting a project like that because I can't draw worth anything, and I would love to be able to have that ability. But seeing all the tech you're buying for it, maybe that makes me think it's a smart decision not to.
Well, it's not just the high tech, it's also low tech. I started mm-hmm. buying like paper drawing, tablets, and I can't even remember what they're called, but drawing paper and pencils and pens and markers and just stuff to try stuff. It's terrible. But anyway, it would have been much more terrible had I not had digital tools. So I have not bought any, for example, oil paints or acrylic paints, which would be a giant mess in storage and smelly and needs cleaning. And at any rate, it has been an interesting problem. Okay. Speaking of smart assistants, I think I mentioned, I know I mentioned in the last podcast 459 that my Echo Show 5, which I bought in December 2019, so it's not that old, it's flickering. In fact, I'm looking at it flickering right now. But it still works. It's just that display flickers. So I'm, you know, and I don't look at it all the time. So it's not, you know, a critical path at some point. Oh, and now the display just went out. But I just changed photos. But anyhow, so I'm considering replacing it. And I was thinking, well, I mean, do I really need two display smart assistants? And I'm, being me, I kind of say yes. they just released a new, I think a new Echo Show, a third generation Echo Show, which is $80. So it's a, you know, really affordable price. So that doesn't bother me too much. The only thing unfortunate is now that I've been using an Eero mesh router with no mesh, meshless mesh router, I was thinking, well, it would be nice to have a little mesh satellite. And Amazon's lower price, and by lower, I mean like half the price, the Echo Pop, the Echo Dots, those have a mesh extension capability. Now, it does limit you to about 100 megabits down. But you know what? As a guy who started with a 300 baud modem, 100 megabits down is not too shabby, you know?
Isn't it funny how the your definition of good or bad speed really is based on your history in tech? Because I've had that a couple of times, too, where someone will say, oh, this is so slow, and I'm thinking, compared to what the experience of the past, this is just fine with me.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I remember when I was working for the telephone company, I wonder if I could have gotten a discount back then. I was really, and I think I had a 9600 baud modem by then, but I was really tempted to go pay for an ISDN BRI line to my home just to get, well, it wasn't actually 128K BPS down because, you know, it's two split 54s and I think a control channel of 16. But anyway, it was way faster than what I had. And the demos I tried were just like, you know, at the time it was blinding speed, right? 56 or having two BRI channels bound together. And it was like, wow, at 112. And so, but I didn't pull the trigger because it was just too expensive. And I was a new dad at the time. It's like, I can use my money elsewhere. But, yeah, so the $40 Echo Dot and a $40 Echo, which is brand new, by the way, it's kind of cool looking, and a $40 Echo, I'm sorry, Echo, what did I say? Echo Dot is the older one, and the new one is called the Echo Pop, are both $40, and they both are Eero, you know, mesh extension. So the other thing I could do, which is not a mesh extension, but would solve if my Echo Show 5 dies, is I have a Kindle Fire 8, and I could put it in show mode and just plug it in and put it on a stand. So I have a backup. Thinking. Don't know. Were you an Echo user? I don't remember. I don't.
For a brief period of time, I had an Echo, and it started to die, and I didn't replace it. I replaced it with a...
Oh, really?
Apple HomePod Mini, just to play with it.
Yeah.
And even though, because I never was really using the smart features anyway of it, it was basically a turn on off lights and Siri doing that, usually. So, I've thought about echoing again, but not really.
Yeah. Well, the Echo, like I said, the Echo Pop is $40. I think if you buy two of them, you can get stereo, which is kind of neat. And if you have, I don't think you use an Eero mesh Wi-Fi, but if you did, they are extensions. You know, and I have a tiny home, as you know, John. I have a very tiny home, but there are these little spots where Wi-Fi is just terrible, and I would like it to not be terrible. And so I have a conventional extender right now.
I've had an Asus router that supports Asus and its mesh for a long time, but I have... Because I'm in an apartment, I've never bought anything to extend it. I've thought about buying something just to play around with the extension capabilities by, you know, because my dad is 5 years old. So it's more like I could pick up something that has the same Asus mesh technology probably for under $50 just to play with and see if it would do anything. So it's one of those maybe if I'm bored sort of projects.
I don't have it in our show notes because I didn't realize you had an Asus router. Were you affected by the outage? The firmware caused outage or something that I read about a couple
of times? If I was, I don't know.
Oh, well, that's good.
I did not appear to be. So.
Okay.
Although I am running a third-party firmware, WRT Merlin firmware.
Yeah.
I have a slight bit different type of basis router than most.
Yeah. Okay, so you that may be what saved you. I think if you're probably using their stock factory firmware, you might have been affected. I'm moving on. So Echo Pop, I'm still kind of tempted to get Echo Pop for $40 because A, it's not that expensive, and B, it is an Eero extender, and it would, I think, solve a few dead spots I have in my tiny little home. Okay, and the last follow-up item I have for this podcast is again from last week, and that we were discussing with Sven and Don the various Google announcements on Google I/O, and I got my Google Pixel 7a on Tuesday. Yeah, I think I got it on Tuesday. It's an upgrade from a 4a. So for me, I've been looking at watching all of these reviews of people talking about it, and all these people buy it every year, so, right? I was like, well, 6a is good enough, blah blah blah. But they're kind of jaded, I think. If you're moving from a 4A to a 7A, that is not an incremental leap. A 4A is a good phone, by the way. Still, served me well. But I didn't get the free earbuds because apparently it's only for if you're buying it for like a new line or just buying it without saying who your carrier is. But I did it as an upgrade to to Google Fi, which is my carrier. And they didn't offer any hardware goodies as an incentive, but they did offer $250 in credit on a $500 phone that is paid doled out monthly on my Google Fi. So it reduces my Google Fi monthly by $10 and some cents a month. I thought that was a good deal. Basically, I got the phone for $250. Harkens back to the days when phones are subsidized,
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so couple of items to discuss. One, this thing runs hot. So one of the things it's been kind of made as a joke, but it's really not, is that the iPhones and iPads run really cool. It is hard to heat them up unless you have a hardware issue or firmware issue.
Or you're in the sun.
Or
if you're in direct sunlight,
they'll do it. Yeah, that's just physics, right? that's
pretty much, yes.
But the Pixel 7a, and I don't think I've noticed this with the 4a, if you watch YouTube, for example, and I was just kind of testing the screen, and you look, because everybody says it's a great screen. I was testing the screen and all that, so I watched YouTube for maybe 10 minutes, and it got up to 104 degrees. I think it was 104 degrees, according to the infrared thermometer I have. And it was almost uncomfortable to the touch. It was certainly not pleasant. Maybe if I were back in Alaska in the dead of winter, 104 degree hand warmer would be welcome. But in Hawaii, not so much. So it ran pretty hot, and I thought, well, maybe it's just videos, because videos do that to you. It's like when we do video conferencing, devices with a fan just start ripping up. So I just used it for a long time, without video, just a lot of apps, went to a lot of browsing, that sort of thing, opened up a couple of apps, and it didn't quite get to 104, but it got to like the high 90s, I think. I've been reading some reviews and looking at some comments on YouTube, and people are blaming it under Tensor, the Google Tensor chip that they use for a lot of the smart stuff it does, it's intelligent items, but we'll see if this becomes a problem. I'm almost afraid to put a case on it. I still don't have a case for it. And of course, a 4A case is, totally different from this, so I can't use that. I need to go find a case for this just to protect it from drops and things, scratches mostly. Don't drop my phone too often. The other thing is that, and the other things are pretty good, actually. Thing number one is the on-screen fingerprint works really well. I don't know if you've ever tried anything with that, so on the iPhones, the fingerprint reader used to be the button at the bottom when iPhones still had a button. Then they took that away and became face recognition only. Well, the 7a has both face recognition, which works well, that's the other thing, and the fingerprint. And so when it's in dim mode, you can see either the lock button or a little fingerprint with a circle around it where the lock is normally is. And if you just sort of tap on it, it opens 100% of the time. If your hand isn't wet or something like that. I use the fingerprint mode is actually faster than face recognition on this device. So I use it all the time.
Yeah, I'm hoping that Apple brings back fingerprint alongside Face ID. It would just be nice to have just for quicker opening when you're picking up the phone before it gets a good look at you or something like that. But
yeah, so I'm really quite pleased with not just that it works, but how well it works, but that I have both options. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice thing to have. And the last thing I wanted to mention that I didn't know about, is that the front facing, the selfie camera has a wide angle mode. It's 0.7, which I don't think I have on my iPhone Pro. I think the iPhone 10 had it for some reason, but the iPhone Pro 14 does not have a wide angle selfie mode. And you've got a big fat head like me, and you want other people to be in the shot. That's a good thing. So I should note that the wide angle mode on the Apple iPhone for the rear facing camera, the high res camera is 0.5. So it's not ultra wide. It's just wide angle, which is still good. It's better than nothing. So those are my initial impressions. The other thing is it seems pretty solid, solid design. I haven't dropped it, but I think it would survive a drop just fine. It's got a good water resistance rating. And I didn't turn on the 90 hertz display. I still got the default 60 frames per second. And again, this is the difference between me as a regular person, the tech enthusiast, but still a regular person, and the pundits. You might remember, John, when the Retina display came out for the iPhone, various pundits would say, hey, the Retina is so good that you can't look at the other screen because it'll scratch your eyes out and hurt you and make your head hurt and stuff. And looks good to me. I have not turned on the 90 frames per second because the 60 looks great, in my opinion. And also, it uses less battery than the 90 FPS refresh rate. So I might turn it on just to see if it really makes a difference and if I'll scratch my eyes out if I go back to 60. But I'm thinking that's probably not the case, and I would appreciate the longer battery life, even though I really don't go many places these days. So,
7-8 thoughts. I'm glad that it's a good, decent upgrade. I would have been really shocked if it hadn't been from a 4A to a 7A. Again, I have, even though I've been in the iOS ecosystem almost exclusively, I may still use Gmail and G Suite for some things. I want Google to have competitive products, and the Pixel phones are good phones. I just want the tablet experience and the watch experience to be on par with Apple so that we can have some choice in the space.
Yeah,
I think it'll all depend a lot on what we see at WWDC in a couple of weeks, too.
Yeah. And also, competition's always good for innovation.
Yes. Right?
And the Android tablet experience, which was interesting in the beginning, became less interesting and actually bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the later years.
Definitely. So this week, I was thinking about what to talk about. I thought I'd ask an AI.
Okay.
Bing AI, what we should talk about. It suggested artificial intelligence, which well played, Bing AI. Talk about yourself. And there was a little bit of news in that ChatGPT did get an official iOS app this week.
Yes, it did.
So people who want to use it. But, I thought that we've talked about AI enough. But then Bing AI wanted to talk about Internet of Things. I don't want to talk about Internet of Things. And Bing AI wanted to talk about augmented reality. And until we see what Apple is or is not doing in that space at WWDC, I don't care about augmented reality right now. And we want to talk about the metaverse. I don't want to talk about the metaverse because I don't know anyone really knows what the metaverse even is. And that's mobile security. And I thought, that's something that's somewhat interesting because I read an article about 3 months ago, or maybe 2 months ago, that I have a link to our show notes from the Wall Street Journal, which, of course, the Wall Street Journal is not written for techies. It's written for business folk. And so this was an interesting article, but it was basically about a new form of crime happening in big cities where teams of criminals watch people at public spaces like bars and restaurants watch for them to enter their passcode on their phone.
Yeah.
And then once they know what their passcode is, they steal the phone. So snatch and grab the phone,
right,
run out, and before the person even really knows what's going on, they have been completely locked out of all of their accounts.
Wow.
Because if you have the iPhone and you have the passcode, you can reset the iCloud password rather easily. You can sign out all other devices. And basically, it's a new form of ransomware, in a sense, where we can lock you completely out. We can resell the phone because, of course, you can turn off Find My and all those things if you have the iCloud account. So their advice in the article was to not use a 4 or 6-digit passcode, but to use a complex passcode or password, which I did do on my iPhone. So I thought, well, the amount of times I actually have to enter that is pretty minimal, so that's not a big deal. I didn't change it on my iPads, though, so apparently I'm not that concerned. So I guess if mobile security now has some new angles to it, I thought it might be time to have a discussion on that and think about what you or I care about. So you are recently retired. You don't go out into dangerous territory that I wouldn't think. And I'm a professor, and I my students are not trying to steal my devices very often, at least as far as I know. So how concerned are you about mobile security day-to-day with your mobile devices?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm worried about it in terms of, you know, I'm worried about it losing it, and losing my device or having it physically stolen. And I guess because I don't use a PIN to open my phone, I use either Face ID or, you know, fingerprint, I'm not too concerned about somebody seeing my PIN, which basically gets entered after a soft reset, like after an update or something. So
if there's too many, you know, one thing I was thinking is if there's too many incorrect attempts through Face ID or fingerprint. So I could imagine a slick criminal group being able to grab a person's phone or jostle it enough to, you know, try to unlock it to the point where the person would have to enter their PIN.
Right.
But yeah, you're right. The amount of times you actually have to enter your PIN are pretty minimal.
Yeah, the aspects of mobile security that I'm more worried about, aside from outright theft and, you know, like I said, being sloppy and losing my phone, which I have not done so far, knock on wood, now it's going to happen, right? I'm not really sure I need to be that concerned, but I'm concerned about using, like, you know, public Wi-Fi hotspots. I know some people say VPNs are not that, you know, are not needed or blah, blah, blah. But, you know, maybe I'm just not smart enough. And I figure, well, it's better than nothing. And I know how a VPN works. So give me some comfort.
It's interesting because I asked Bing AI, having this conversation with me about what we should talk about. I asked them for mobile security tips because I was curious how good or bad these tips would be.
Right.
And one of them was the standard public Wi-Fi tip. And I've seen that a lot of places for a number of years now. You know, when public Wi-Fi first was introduced back in, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago now, it was very much with routers and Wi-Fi routers that didn't do AP isolation. They did. Basically, if you were connected, you saw all the traffic just like you were on a wired.
Yes.
That was, I think at the time, especially before HTTPS was so common, that was the big concern, was if you're on public Wi-Fi and someone's sitting there with Wireshark, they can sniff your packet, see what's going on.
Right.
Now, a lot of people are saying, well, I don't worry too much about public Wi-Fi. But ironically, it's public USB that has become the bigger worry now. Because people are starting to realize about how random USB ports can be used with different hacking tools that can masquerade as just USB port for charging, but also deliver payloads to a device.
Right.
So it's interesting that Bing AI gave me avoid public Wi-Fi, but did not give me avoid public USB,
which
I'd argue is the much bigger argument or the problem today.
And don't pick up strange USB thumb drives and plug it into your computer.
Yes. But pick up strange USB thumb drives and plug them into other people's computers.
That's right. That's right.
And you don't have to worry about it.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that because just, I guess, a week or so ago, I got in. I waited for a couple of weeks to ship from. And I'm kind of worried because I bought it on Amazon, but it came from China. Well, everything does, right? But I bought some USB power only adapters. So basically, they have a USB-A on one end and a USB, or actually a USB-A on one end and a Lightning or USB-C on the other end. So it only plugs into a USB-A port, which makes sense. I've never seen a public port that's USB-C yet, although I'm sure they're there. And basically, you know, if you look at a USB, do I have one here? If you look at a USB port, it's basically got four gold or some other metal connectors on it. And, you know, numbered one, let's call it 1, 2, 3, and 4. So 1 and 4 are power, and 2 and 3 are data. Basically, it's a two pair, just like a telephone line. And so I thought, I bought a couple of them. I got a 3-pack, but then they shipped me 4, so not complaining. For my daughter, who, as you know, travels quite a bit and is going to be actually, she's going to be going to some overseas trips this year. So she's God knows where she's going to be. So, you know, plugging into various cafes and things and airports. So I bought her some of these to take with her. Because I had that concern too. And again, I don't know if I'm just being paranoid, but it seems like people are worried about it. Maybe not the word is reasonable, but it seemed realistic that this could happen. Yeah. And so that's what I did. And they're not expensive, by the way, because basically, you know, you're buying a USB adapter that's missing two things. So I think it was under $10 a pack of 4. I tested it to make sure it could deliver power, but I did not test to see if it could actually, you know, it doesn't actually block data. It doesn't have the data ports or the, you know, two or three.
Which is nice that it's a simple enough thing that even, you know, just a little bit geeky people like you and I could check. I mean, we could open them up, look at it, see if there's actually connectors there or not.
Yeah.
And if the connectors are there, if they're connected to anything or not.
Yeah. And if you're really geeky, you can actually, you know, take a USB cable yourself and just, you know, strip off the...
Yeah. Yeah, just cut the wide line part.
Really powerful. Just scrape off the connectors, you know, scrape the gold off or whatever. So
Or
paint it over.
Yeah.
You know.
So that was one of the tips it gave me. It also gave me a few others. Have a passcode on your phone. And I was curious, do you know anyone that does not have a passcode?
People in TV shows apparently do not use passcodes because their phones are always being used by other people. But aside from people in TV shows, no, I can't think of anybody actually. I think modern phones come set up so that they basically tell you have to enter a passcode.
Well,
they
highly encourage you to.
Yeah.
They don't make it easy for you not to. I actually do know a few people that do not have passcodes on their phone.
Really?
But they don't do anything on their phones that you would really care too much about. I mean, their messages are on there, and they can make phone calls, but they don't use any kind of banking applications. They don't, in some cases, don't even have their email on their phone. They might take photos, but they don't take photos of anything that they care about. So
is this sort of a personal security concern, or they just don't use tech?
Don't use tech that much.
They
use the bare minimum of tech.
Yeah.
So that's the only people I know that don't have a passcode is that they basically resisted it and they figure, well, there's nothing I'm doing with it that I need to care about.
I like these people.
Yeah. Another tip was use antivirus software. I have not used antivirus software in years because it was always
on a phone
and didn't really make, well, on anything really.
But
antivirus, even on a phone, seems really useless. The one that I found interesting that is always prescient is be careful with downloads and attachments.
Yes.
And it made me think of recently the YouTube channel Linus Tech Tips was hacked. And
really?
The way that hack actually worked was rather interesting. It was someone in their business development team received what looked to be a PDF file for a proposal for a sponsorship or something or another. And it was named, you know, something like PDF proposal for whatever.com.
Right.
They downloaded it, and that's what it looked like on their desktop. Well, of course, on Windows, if you execute something that ends in .com, that's not a PDF. That is an actual executable file. You know, back in the days of .com files and .exes, before .exe became the dominant executable file extension. So it's a rather novel little... way to bypass people's built-in screening where you go, they just put the domain name .com at the end of the file. Sure, it must be .com.pdf. Nope, it's just .com. The interesting way that this had unfolded was that when that .com file was executed, It basically searched for browser cache files on the person's computer, zipped them all up and sent them off to a payload server, and then did nothing. There was no sign that it did anything else. Well, in the browser cache were stored authentication cookies for different cloud services. And so basically what the attacker was able to do was unzip that cache directory and load it into their browser. And then their browser was a carbon copy of the browser sitting on that person's machine with their authentication token cookie sitting there. And that's how they were able to get it and hijack a few streams and things like that. So it was a rather interesting attack because, of course, when someone's getting attacked, they immediately think, well, I got to change my passwords. I need to, you know, do this and that.
Right.
And it took quite a while for them to realize that changing the passwords wasn't going to work because there were authentication tokens that were still valid in browser cache. And that was what the attacker had, was those authentication tokens.
You know, boy, I'm trying to figure out if I'm misremembering this, but tell me if you remember this. Back in the dark ages of technology, this would be the 1990s, I think one of the zip apps like PKZip or something used to create an exe file that compressed it. So basically you didn't need PKZip on the other end. This was a convenience, put that in quotes. So you could ship off, say, like, hey John, I'm going to send you a bunch of files. I think you might, you know, photos you might find interesting. It's in this file called photos.exe. Just run it on your PC.
Yeah, I remember that. And I remember that you could exploit the auto run features of, you know, Windows 95, Windows 98 to auto run whatever you unzipped. You know, it found it autorun.inf. I think it would automatically execute it. Of course, if you want to do that today, you could just go download any of the setup creation, you know, open source setup creator apps for deploying software and create an MSI or an EXE and do exactly the same thing. But at least people are probably aware that that's going to execute on their system. But yeah, those little zip self-executables were cool when not everyone knew how to unzip, but when zip software wasn't built into the
OS. Right, right, right. Yeah, now zip is built into, on Windows and Mac, you can just unzip anything or uncompress anything. But yeah, it's, you know, used to be an extra utility that you had to download and install, and some people used to buy commercial ones. And it's, you know, even viewing files, remember? We used to trade tips about which file photo viewers we would use or image viewers we would use. And, things we don't really think about anymore. Now, that was a good one. I like your Ask the AI weekly questions.
Yeah, except we didn't use its suggestion to talk about it. You know, we're not going to be fooled that easily.
Oh, just bow to your new AI overlord, and we will, you know, we will honor it and praise it, be nice to it so it's nice to us later on. I did want to mention a couple of things. One thing, adding to my Pixel 7a comment, is this is not new to the 7a, but it's new to me. My 4a did not support Qi wireless charging, and the 7a does. So I took out my Qi wireless charger, which had been sitting, you know, collecting dust for years, and plugged it in. And sure enough, I plop my Pixel 7a on it before I go to sleep, and then I wake up and it's charged up. You know, people, again, these are pundits, right? So, and again, I don't travel, so maybe that's the other thing anymore. Or I don't travel anymore, so maybe that's the thing. But they say, well, it's so slow, you know, it's like, I don't know, 7-watt charge or something. It takes like 3 hours to charge from zero. Well, that might be true, but I hardly ever go to zero. And I sleep more than an hour and a half. So 3 hours is plenty fast, or, you know, an hour and a half, because I don't usually go below 50% battery in the course of a day. So charging while I sleep is just fine and dandy, and I'm kind of glad it doesn't charge any faster, because then it might get hot, and I kind of worry about heat. I always say heat is the enemy for electronics. Either too cold or too hot is really not good, any extreme. So I'm really, it's really nice to have Qi charging, Qi wireless charging again on my Pixel. I think earlier ones I did had, like a, I don't know, maybe the Nexus or something. But my 4A did not have Qi charging, which I thought was weird. And the last thing I wanted to mention is, and it's a very sad thing, it's my iPad Mini 6. And I love my iPad Mini 6. My iPad Mini 6 stopped charging right after a podcast. I plugged it in like a Monday or a Tuesday, and I opened it up thinking, oh, it should be charged right now. And it was still where it was, like, you know, I don't know, 50% or whatever. And I said, well, shoots. So I thought, and I looked at my Anker. I have a really nice Anker power hub that I bought last year. Figure which model it is, but it's a really nice one. It's got two USB-C PD ports, two USB-A ports, and two AC outlets. So I thought, well, shoot. And I looked at my Anker, and it usually has a little ring light that's on that indicates it's on. You can turn it off. I leave it on. I said, hey, the ring light's off. I wonder if my hub is broken. So I, you know, fussed about with it. I said, no. Then I unplugged my Mini from it, and the light came back on. I plugged my Mini back in, the light went off. I used a different cable, and same problem, same behavior. I plugged in other devices, and it charged. It wasn't a cable, it wasn't a hub. I think the Anker actually detected some kind of short in my iPad Mini 6. And when I plugged it in, it says, hey, you've got a shorted device. I'm not sending power to it. It just turned off the light. I did try other chargers, by the way, just to make sure of that too. And, you know, nothing would charge my iPad Mini 6. So I called up Apple, talked to a text chat with a nice Apple support person somewhere not in the U.S. Very helpful. Went through all the diagnostics I already went through that I just told you about. And he said, do you want to take it to Apple Store? I go, no, the Genius Bar is a terrible experience. I do not want to go into an Apple Store. He said, that's fine. So they shipped me a box, and I sent it in for repair last week. Hopefully it'll be back in a week or two, repaired or replaced, because it's still under Apple Care. I bought my iPad Mini 6 September 2021, so it's still got 6 months left. At any rate, I love my iPad Mini 6, and I'm really sad that I don't have it anymore.
Well, at least it is still under warranty. I'll be curious to see if they send you back. I assume they will not send you back your original one. It will probably be refurbished. But it'd be interesting if they actually do repair yours.
It was pretty weird, but fortunately I had enough of a charge that I could wipe it before I sent it. You know, speaking of mobile security. So it had enough of a charge left that I could wipe it with, you know, before the battery ran down, and I flipped it off and dropped it off at FedEx, and off it went. Boy, you know, you don't think about your devices, the ones you use a lot, until you don't have it anymore.
Yeah, I know. When I had to send in my MacBook last year, and I was living off of my iPads for a couple of days, it was really interesting how much I missed my MacBook.
Yeah, well, you know, I have other iPads, but in fact, I have an iPad Mini 4. Yeah, I think I have an iPad Mini 4 that I still keep charged up, and I've been using that, and boy, is it slow. I gave my iPad Mini 5 to my daughter to take with her on her trip, so, because she has a 4 also. I said, if mine is slow, yours must be slow also. Take my 5. So she's been using that. But at any rate, yeah, so my iPad Mini 6, the Anker power hub thing was the thing that really got me, though. I thought the light was just decorative, but apparently it's actually, you know, it's actually useful as a diagnostic. If that light goes off when it should be on, you might want to check if you've got a short in your charging or whatever the problem is in mine, basically. This is the first time this has happened to me, by the way. I've never had a charging port problem on any iOS, iPadOS device ever. Going back to the iPhone 3G, I think, which was my first. Well, that wasn't Lightning. Was it? I forget what
iPhone
I used.
iPhone 30-pin?
Was it 30-pin? Yeah, and I never had a problem with 30-pin connector. That thing was rock solid.
The iPhone 5 that came out with Lightning.
Lightning.
It was 5 or 6.
Yeah.
And out of it.
So, anywho, that's my sad tale to end this thing. I should note that I still have lots of tests to do on the Pixel 7a. I'm waiting for a clear night sky. We've had a lot of cloudy skies because I want to test its astrophotography mode. Oh, I did have one other thing to mention to you. Amazon Prime Photo Storage, unlimited photo storage. So Amazon Prime Photo Storage is unlimited, but I think as we discussed a bunch of podcasts ago, its video is limited to 5 gigabytes. Of video file storage, and I ran out of video file storage. It's not a big deal. Because I use OneDrive, I use Google Photos, and I use what else do I use? Oh, iCloud. So I've got all those subscriptions. So it was my backup to my backup to my backup. So I'm okay. I've got three functional video backups. So I feel pretty good about that. But yeah, so they, as we mentioned earlier, it does have a 5 gigabyte limit, and I just reached it after all these years.
Good to know.
Yep, yep. Okie dokie, John. Thank you as usual. And to our five of listeners, I hope you found some of this useful. I always enjoy talking to John. We will
talk. I am that great.
Yeah, you are. We'll talk to you next time.